The events of the book of Nehemiah probably occurred around 450 years before Christ. The people of Judah, the Israelites, had returned from 70 years captivity in Babylon around 90 years prior to that. They rebuilt the temple, but as the decades passed, the walls of the city of Jerusalem still had not been rebuilt. In ancient times, the walls of a city were its source of protection. Nehemiah held the distinguished position of cupbearer to the king of Persia. Persia was the world power at this time, around 450 BC. As the book of Nehemiah opens, visitors to the capital city of Susa inform Nehemiah that the walls of Jerusalem were still in disrepair. Nehemiah was disturbed, and the king of Persia, Artaxerxes, saw how depressed he was, and the king inquired about the reason for his sadness. Nehemiah told him the reason, and when the king was sympathetic, Nehemiah asked for a leave of absence to go to Jerusalem and see the conditions of the city for himself. Artaxerxes granted his request. When Nehemiah got to Jerusalem, the first thing he did was to inspect the walls. He then told the people that they needed to set up a building program to rebuild the walls of the city. The problem is that when their neighbors to the north and the east were made aware that, by King Artaxerxes' authority, efforts were going to be made to benefit the Israelites, they were not pleased. Nehemiah chapter 2 verse 10 says, "When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites." Then when Nehemiah and the Israelites agreed to begin rebuilding the wall, we're told in chapter 2 verse 19 that when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Gershom the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us, saying, "What is this you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" They feared that a revitalized Jerusalem and Judah would reduce their influence and power in the region. Their mocking and ridicule were designed to discourage the Jews from cooperating with Nehemiah in rebuilding the walls. We just covered the basics of chapters 1 and 2 of the book of Nehemiah. Chapter 3 tells of the early efforts of reconstruction, but beginning in chapter 4, opposition begins, and opposition often causes discouragement. The title of this lesson is "Lest You Become Discouraged," and this is based on Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3, which says, "Consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls." Discouragement can strike anyone, young or old. And it does strike most. Someone has said, "More people fail through discouragement than for any other reason." I don't know if that's true, but discouragement affects leaders and followers alike. It robs energy, it consumes strength, it distorts vision, and discouragement can even cause physical ailments. Discouragement was something that Nehemiah and the Lord's people were going to have to contend with again and again, as we find in chapter 4. From our text, we want to consider some causes of discouragement. Nehemiah was trying to do a good work, and almost instantly he faced opposition. Opposition can come in different forms, and opposition is often the cause of discouragement. Mockery, criticism, and ridicule began immediately. We read in verses 1 through 3, "When Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?' Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, 'What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones.'" In verse 2, Sanballat said, "What are these feeble Jews doing?" The Hebrew word, which is translated feeble, is derived from a verb which carried several derogatory meanings. One of its usages was as of a woman who was no longer able to bear children. And then you have the condescending remark by Tobiah the Ammonite in verse 3. What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones. The world's response to God's work is often anger. I've read that archaeologists have found that Nehemiah's wall was 9 feet thick. That doesn't sound like something a fox could break down. This just illustrates the fact that when people are opposing what is good, they will lie and they will go to any extreme to defeat it. When the Lord's people shun evil and seek to do good, it often makes unbelievers uncomfortable by challenging their values and their worldviews. Doing a good work is often difficult enough on its own. Having the desire and the discipline to put forth the effort and to see it to completion can be trying, even when you're being encouraged and supported by others. But when you try to follow Christ, you become aware that opposition is all around, and you realize you have to take a stand against it. There's opposition to Christ's teaching, and there's pressure to conform regarding immorality, false religious ideas, unchristlike attitudes, and other things that are contrary to the teachings of Christ. There's a Peanuts cartoon where Snoopy is sliding along on a frozen pond on his little bare paws. He's having a great time. He has on his little toboggan, and he's smiling and doing all kinds of skating tricks. Lucy walks up and slides out onto the pond with her skates on. And Snoopy, doing a little twirl, slides up right in front of her. She says to him, "That's not skating. That's sliding." He just stands there and looks up at her as she goes on with her lecture. Sarcastically, she says, "You don't have any skates on. Skating is when you have skates on. You're not skating at all. You're just sliding." Snoopy finally walks over to the bank of the pond and thinks, "How could I have been so stupid? And I thought I was having fun." Ridicule makes you question yourself. It makes you question your judgment. It makes you question your decision, even when what you are doing is innocent, even when what you are doing is honorable and good. When Sanballat and Tobiah realize the ridicule is not working, they mobilize the other surrounding peoples to join them in a more aggressive plot. Verse 7 says, "When Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the people of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. The nations listed covered each side, north, south, east, and west of Judah. The ridicule, the contempt, the threats, the opposition began taking its toll on the Jews." We read in verse 10, "Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, 'The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall.'" Discouragement can come as a result of fear of the unknown. It can come from uncertainty regarding the future. Verse 11 said, "Also our enemies said, 'Before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and we will kill them and put an end to the work.'" What's going to happen? What does the future hold? No matter where you turn, there will be trouble. These are thoughts that begin to plague the minds when someone becomes discouraged. And discouragement can come from those who should be your support. Verse 12 says, "Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, 'Wherever you turn, they will attack us.'" It's really disconcerting. It's really discouraging when you're facing challenges and oppositions and those whom you should be able to look to for support begin to be part of the problem. Fears of friends can be worse than threats from enemies. What happens when someone becomes discouraged? One result of discouragement is a loss of strength. Again, verse 10 said, "Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, 'The strength of the laborers is giving out.' The strength of the laborers was undermined. All the issues we discussed earlier exacerbate the problem. They weaken one's resolve. They weaken one's determination. Another result of discouragement is a loss of vision. Verse 10 tells us that the people in Judah said, "There is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." It seems they began looking at the rubbish instead of focusing on the wall. They were no longer envisioning a completed wall. Clear out the rubbish and focus on rebuilding. Another result of discouragement is a loss of confidence. When you lose your confidence, you become unable to do the job. We saw in verse 6 that the people previously had a mind to work, a heart to work. But when you lose your confidence, you lose your motivation. And loss of security is another result of discouragement. Verse 12 says, "Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, 'Wherever you turn, they will attack us.'" When discouraged, you are no longer sure about anything, no longer secure in anything. A sense of fear has taken over. These Jews were ready to retreat. They were ready to quit, ready to give up on a good work. Well, how did Nehemiah overcome this discouragement? Each time he was faced with opposition, each time he was faced with a discouraging situation, Nehemiah responded by looking to the Lord. The first response to ridicule that we see in the text is prayer. After the initial mockery, criticism, and ridicule, Nehemiah prays to God. Verses 4 through 6 and verse 9. Verses 4 through 6 says, "Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." Nehemiah asked God to judge and to punish those who opposed his work. This may seem self-centered and vindictive, but Nehemiah believed that when the people of God are involved in the work of God, any assault on them was an assault on God himself. And don't we see that in the New Testament? In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus talks about the judgment day, and he says he will tell those on the right that they will inherit eternal life because when he was hungry, verse 35 and following, they gave him something to eat. When he was thirsty, they gave him something to drink. When he was a stranger, they invited him in. When he needed clothes, they clothed him. When he was sick, they looked after him. And when he was in prison, they came to visit him. Then verse 37 says that the righteous asked, "When did we do these things for you?" And he says, "Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Then Jesus repeats the list for those on the left, saying they will go away into eternal punishment because they did not do those things for him. And when they ask when they failed to do those things for him, his response is in verse 45, "Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." Jesus is saying, "How you treat my followers is how you treat me." And in Acts chapter 9, verse 4, Jesus asked Saul of Tarsus, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Saul was persecuting Christ by persecuting Christ's followers, the church. And then again, after their enemies raised the stakes, when the opposition began to plot to take violent action against them, Nehemiah and the people, this time, responded immediately with prayer. Verse 9 says, "But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat." Prior to this verse, the prayers recorded in the book of Nehemiah are individual prayers. This one was a group prayer. Nehemiah's spirit had affected the entire group of workers. When the resolve of the Lord's people began to weaken, Nehemiah responded accordingly. He exhorted the people to remember God. We read in verses 13 and 14, "Therefore I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your families, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. Remember who God is. Remember the things God has said. Remember his promises. Remember the things God has done. This is what Nehemiah was saying to the people. When we become discouraged, one of the best remedies is to get busy. We saw that in the previous verse. And then in verse 15 says, when our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to our own work. Nehemiah had posted guards with weapons at the weaker points in the wall. He had organized the guards according to families for mutual encouragement, and he got busy working. Then verses 16 through 20 tells us that Nehemiah called the leaders and the workers together, and he encouraged them to trust God. Beginning in verse 16, it says, from that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other, and each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other doing the wall, along the wall, rather. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us. He's saying, put your trust in God. And when discouragement comes, we need to focus on something other than self. Verses 21 through 23 says, so we continued the work with half the men holding spears from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time I also said to the people, have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night, so they can serve as guards by night and as workers by day. Neither I nor my brothers nor my men nor the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water. We can overcome discouragement by prayer, by remembering God, by getting busy, by trusting God, and we can overcome discouragement by directing our attention away from ourselves and on to a worthy task. Discouragement is one of Satan's primary tools. It can defeat the strongest of men. In the book of Nehemiah, opposition and discouragement continues internally and externally throughout chapter 5, but the wall is completed near the end of chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 15 tells us it was completed in 52 days. So chapter 4 illustrates three types of opposition to Nehemiah and the people of Jerusalem. We see opposition by ridicule, opposition by threat of attack, and opposition by fear. Each time Nehemiah was confronted with a potentially discouraging development, he directed his attention and his energy towards the Lord, and he got busy with positive and purposeful actions. And that's what we need to do whenever discouragement raises its head in our lives.